Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Stopping in the middle of I-70 to fight somebody is crazy enough. But after that road rage incident caught on camera that went viral, police went on a wild ride of their own tracking down the suspect. Our Mark Salinger shows us how they did it.
In a place where cars usually speed by at 60 miles an hour, two men decided to stop in the middle of I-70 on Wednesday and fight.
Goes back to the trunk of his car, gets a tire iron.
The video is wild. The way the police caught them is also interesting.
People who were passing by were only able to give partial plates, but the dispatchers were able to identify the exact plate for that car.
Alex Rose is with Wheat Ridge Police. As soon as dispatchers got a license plate, officers ran it through Colorado's network of license plate reading cameras that track cars.
Another agency had a hit on a license plate reader for that vehicle near Colorado Mills Mall.
A couple miles down I-70, Lakewood police immediately launched their drone that's stationed on the roof of the mall. Police departments across the state are now implementing drones as first responder programs, like this example in Commerce City. It allows them to remotely launch and operate drones around their jurisdictions. At Colorado Mills, they quickly found the car involved in the road rage incident.
Other partner agencies like Lakewood, they could just launch them from the top of a building and they can get an eye on the situation within a matter of seconds.
Officers responded and found one of the suspects in the food court. The other driver called police himself. Both drivers were given a summons for disorderly conduct.
These are different tools and resources that gives us a better perspective that we otherwise wouldn't have.
The drone as first responder program, along with license plate readers, are both technologies that we've covered a lot on this show, but they're truly changing how police solve crimes. For all the privacy concerns that we hear about, situations like this are why cities are so reluctant to do away with them, Kyle. They're so incredibly powerful.
And Mark, somewhat ironic, the drone stationed on the mall, with the shopping mall being the epicenter of all sorts of shenanigans and tomfoolery through decades of American history.
Yeah, you just don't need the hail coming down on Colorado Mills Mall with all that that drone stuff at the top. But seriously, that drone can just launch by itself from the top of the mall, the roof there, and just fly as far as they can get it to go and see stuff before officers can even respond.
Well, you're now on notice if you're at or near the mall. Mark Salinger, thank you. Doctors in Colorado are reportedly refusing to provide some medical care for fear they will be arrested by the Trump administration. The state Supreme Court ordered Children's Hospital Colorado to resume gender-affirming care for minors despite federal threats. But now the hospital says its doctors are refusing to comply with the court order for fear of federal prosecution. This week, medical staff at Children's True Center for Gender Diversity notified patients that they were, quote, forced to make a very difficult decision and that they would not resume prescribing hormone therapy and puberty blockers. The providers say they're worried about losing their medical license or facing criminal charges. According to Children's, those healthcare workers came to their own decision after speaking with outside lawyers. Children's Hospital says they don't employ those medical providers that offer the care. They work for the CU Anschutz School of Medicine, so they can make their own decisions about what they will and will not do. In a statement today, the hospital said this is a, quote, complex situation with no easy answers. The hospital had also previously asked patients to pay up to a $250,000 bond before reinstating care because hospital leaders are worried that defying the Trump administration could cost more than $2 million in legal fees and lost funding. The Democratic primary for Colorado Attorney General features a fundraising and public relations powerhouse without much legal experience, Jenna Griswold, against three other candidates with deep legal experience, Boulder DA Michael Dougherty, former federal prosecutor Hedel Doshi, and consumer attorney David Seligman. Griswold is declining to appear on 9 News and answer our questions. All this week, we will be featuring Next Conversations with the other three candidates for Attorney General on a variety of topics. Tonight, their number one priority as AG.
Right now, it's protecting our democracy. When I look at a lawless Trump administration coming after Colorado in particular, the next attorney general has to have experience as a lawyer and a proven track record of standing up and fighting for justice and the rule of law. And that's the kind of work I've done, as you know, my entire career. And I've also been a leader of large law offices and just deciding what fights to take on and how to win those fights.
You can make a name for yourself opposing Donald Trump. Jenna Griswold's done it on MSNBC. Phil Weiser has done it with a number of lawsuits against the president. How do you convince Coloradans who don't necessarily share your political views that those are worthy fights?
Well, it's about standing up and fighting for Colorado. And throughout my career, I've always done it with integrity. And that's what the next attorney general has to do. And it's not about seeking to get my face on MSNBC. It's about standing up in court and saying, I'm here on behalf of the people of Colorado, and doing it with integrity, never based on political ambition or a hyperpartisan agenda. And there are times where Trump has just violated the rule of law and harmed Colorado. And that'll always be the criteria I use in deciding when to take Trump to court. And to me, it's about beating Trump in the court of law, not tweeting at him in the court of opinion.
Well, I think the number one priority for any candidate in this moment is existential, which is defending Colorado in terms of a rule of law attack. And so holding the federal government to account when they come for Coloradans, whether it's democracy building or rule of law attacks, and making sure that we protect the individual and civil rights and liberties of Coloradans is top of mind for me.
I mean, certainly it's easy to make a name for yourself in Democratic politics by being anti-Trump these days.
Of course.
How do you distinguish threats to Colorado and just this is popular because it gets me in the headlines for opposing Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think this is something that I talk a lot about on the campaign trail. I have said many times that being anti-Trump on its own is not a complete political philosophy. The thing that I intend to prioritize as your next attorney general is making sure that we build a better future on the other side of a Trump presidency that is durable and enduring in terms of our economic and legal structures. I will not have this administration and his cronies make sure that they set an agenda for us. It should be the other way around, which is why I've often said that Trump as a concept, as a person, as an administration, should not be the way that the Democratic Party should define our values.
We're surrounded by crises everywhere. But one that's on my mind right now, and this could change, one that's on my mind right now, is we've got hundreds and hundreds of people right now locked up in a for-profit private prison just a couple of miles from here, taken away from their families because they look Latino, because they speak Spanish, because they work a low-wage job. These folks are my clients, folks I've been fighting for years.
What will a state attorney general do about people locked up on federal charges at the GEO Group in Aurora?
Well, I'll tell you right now, there's lots of evidence that the folks inside that facility are being fed moldy food, right? Are being denied the very basics, being denied health care. You know, when I'm attorney general, I'm gonna be banging on the door of that facility, right? A subpoena in my hand. Let me in. Let's make sure the people in that facility are getting treated in accordance with state law. Right?
You got members of Congress that are already doing that similar function of going in, demanding oversight, taking a look at things, raising those concerns. Why does the state AG need to do it?
Because of our enforcement authority. The enforcement authority to hold private prison companies accountable, the enforcement authority to hold ICE officers accountable. You know, I've been saying for many, many months, when I'm attorney general, I won't be afraid to prosecute ICE officers when they trample our rights.
Tomorrow night on Next, the Democratic candidates for AG talk crime and the role of flock surveillance cameras. You can see our full extended conversations with Michael Dougherty, David Seligman, and Hal Doshi. They're going up on the Next YouTube channel tonight. And again, Jenna Griswold is declining to appear on 9 News or answer questions. The Denver Post building downtown is losing the name, long after losing the newspaper staff that once called it home. The Post owner reached a deal with its landlord, the city of Denver, after falling millions of dollars behind on rent. The city bought the old Post building in 2024 for $88 million and took over the Post lease. The city says the Post owner stopped paying its $650,000 monthly rent payments last August. After a court battle, the Post owners reached a deal with the city to pay $13 million and end the lease early, just a fraction of the $34 million the Post was supposed to pay throughout the full lease term, but the city is calling it a win. The mayor says the city will be made whole because it's taking over paid parking and existing leases within the building. The Post owners have to vacate the space they still have in the building, and they have to take down the words Denver Post on the building's exterior. Fort Collins is the latest city to decide whether license plate reading cameras should get the flock out of town.
A lot of times when a primary is determinative, that will shape who wins in November. It matters to participate now.
The folks trying to get unaffiliated voters off the sidelines for this month's primaries. Next. City Council in Fort Collins will decide tonight whether the city should continue using flock license plate reading cameras. They're the latest city to face protests over the controversial use of mass surveillance. Flock has provided 15 automated license plate readers to Fort Collins police for about a year now. The cameras have received pushback from immigration advocates and civil rights groups who worry that federal agents are using the cameras for immigration enforcement. Fort Collins police have argued that Flock is a powerful tool to help them solve crimes. City Council is set to decide whether to continue the current contract with Flock, which is currently set to end next year. Chris Bianchi, all the Flock surveillance cameras around Colorado looking at us today saw us hot and maybe bothered, maybe not.
I think they picked up on the fact that it was pretty hot today. I think most of you did as well. And if you thought today was hot, wait till what we've got in store for tomorrow. 93 today, hottest temperature in 299 days since August the 21st of last year. Our fourth day at or above 90 so far this year. Officially in Denver, temperatures across eastern Colorado, mostly in the 90s today. 94 in Fort Collins, 70s and 80s in the high country. 94 in Grand Junction, where you're going to hit 100 tomorrow for the first time in 2026 out on the western slope. Fire weather warning, that's the other big story. This covers most of the mountains, and that fire danger will be highest tomorrow as we're talking about the warmest and windiest weather tomorrow of the week. So again, those winds really start to whip tomorrow afternoon, some 30 to 40 and occasionally 50 mile an hour winds for us in the foothills and in the mountains. Those winds will relax though on Thursday. Then tomorrow, 96 for us in Denver. Current record is 100 degrees for us here in town. So a toasty one ahead tomorrow, but then we cool down into the upper 80s before we warm right back up again for Friday and Saturday. Showers and storms return both days this weekend and into the early part of next week. And then it finally cools down a little bit more meaningfully for the early to mid part of next week as well.
Bomar is a beautiful little town. Better go see it while you can. Bomar is now extending a middle finger to the cities of Denver and Littleton, brushing off their concern and saying they're going to go ahead with gating off the public streets into Bomar. Neighboring cities have said they might put up barriers of their own, blocking the exits from Bomar. At a public meeting last night, the residents were overwhelmingly supportive of a $200,000 project to install gates at two entrances to town. People who live in Bomar would get a tag for their cars to automatically open the gates to what would then become a gated community, like an entire town's worth. All of us peasants on the outside would need a code to get in if you wanted to, say, get in there to deliver a pizza or mow somebody's lawn or clean their house. Bomar residents say that through traffic from non-residents is a danger. People are speeding, driving drunk, clogging up their streets. Critics of the gate plan say that this will block a signaled intersection and push drivers into less safe, less familiar alternate routes. They also voice concerns about how it's going to work to get emergency access for first responders. The Denver mayor's office told us they're still working with Littleton to review all the options to keep people safe. And they said the idea of gating off Denver to Bomar is still on the table. Colorado's unaffiliated voters have a lot of power, which most choose not to use.
So it matters for folks to participate now because shaping the electorate happens in June.
A new outreach program is trying to get people off the sidelines and vote this month. That's next. The largest group of voters in Colorado, unaffiliated voters, are also the least likely to cast a ballot in the primary in 2 weeks. The group's working to change that. They talked with our Angelie McCall.
Our first mailer, no party, no problem.
One group takes more convincing to vote, especially in the primaries.
And so it matters for folks to participate now because shaping the electorate happens in June.
Unaffiliated voters make up the largest voter group in the state, and they're the least likely to cast a ballot in the primary.
Yeah, so only 17% of those unaffiliated vote in primaries.
Tookie Wilson with Colorado Informed is targeting them as part of a campaign, hoping they submit a ballot.
And we have some research, but it's a little murky. We don't quite know why folks aren't participating. And you see higher rates of participation amongst political parties.
The team is focusing on two state house districts near Longmont and Colorado Springs. 6,000 unaffiliated voters who have a record of casting a ballot in general elections, but skipping the primaries.
If the majority of folks are unaffiliated, and full disclosure, I'm an unaffiliated voter, I want my politicians to have my interests at heart. And to do that, I have to show up and show them that I care about my voice being heard in the primary.
They're trying to get the numbers up. Take Boulder County, for instance, in the 2022 primaries. Of the more than 220,000 active voters, Just more than 28,000 unaffiliated voters actually cast a ballot. Democrat registered voters almost doubled those numbers, casting roughly 42,000 ballots in the same election. DU professor Seth Maskett says that kind of turnout is a trend.
I was tracking it to some extent in 2022, and, you know, registered Democrats, registered Republicans were turning out at about twice the rate of unaffiliated voters in the primary.
Maskett says reasons might vary, but less party loyalty could translate to less voter engagement outside of big elections.
A lot of times when a primary is determinative, that will shape who wins in November. It matters to participate now.
There's a lot of theories about why unaffiliated voters don't vote as often in primaries. One of them being they just don't know that they can vote in the primaries. Evidence of that is that we do see unaffiliated voters cast two ballots, a Republican and a Democrat one, which in turn invalidates their vote. In Boulder County in the 2024 primary, 358 people cast both ballots. And in El Paso County, more than 2,400 people cast two ballots when they weren't supposed to, Kyle.
Yep. If you're going to vote in a primary, just vote in one. Anjali, I think one of the myths about unaffiliated voters in Colorado is that they are gettable by both parties, right? That, like, the Democrats and Republicans have an equal chance to persuade them to vote their way. That's not who unaffiliateds are.
Right. I think a lot of people hear unaffiliated and they think independent. And actually, the data shows that many of them act very partisan. So they may vote Democrat and Democrat in numerous elections year over year, right? But ultimately, they don't want to associate with the party, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I hear that. Listen, unaffiliated here. All right, Anjali McCall, thank you. We are back with your feedback next. How's your day going?
It's going great. How is yours?
Stupendous. It's next. Feedback via text. So let me get this straight. Lauren Boebert will come on next, but Jenna Griswold won't? Yes, that's correct. This on Bomar putting up gates at the edge of their town. Tibbs on X says, if all towns were allowed to wall themselves off to non-residents, imagine the dysfunction that would cause. It does have a certain dystopian flair, Tibbs. This from John. Really sucks for me. There's a set of bushes at the Bomar sign that's perfect for me to take a leak on at 2 a.m. when I drive through. Now what the hell am I supposed to do? John, I feel like you are the problem. I feel like you have ruined this for everyone. If you had just gone before you drove home, Bomar wouldn't be putting up gates.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.